This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Line A, bank pass looking for Bufflin. Down in the goal line for Bufflin. Bufflin centers, he scores! Paul Stastny on some great work by Line A and Bufflin, and the Winnipeg Jets have extended the lead to 2-0.
That goal by Paul Stastny, his first of the playoffs at the 7:42 mark of the third period, proves to be the game-winning goal for the Winnipeg Jets. They go on to a 4-1 victory last night over the Minnesota Wild. They take a 2-0 series lead in the best-of-seven Central Division playoff matchup. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all of us, for all of you joining us via the iHeartRadio app and at TSN1290.ca, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We have 3 hours of Winnipeg Jets and NHL discussion and analysis for you on this Saturday morning. We want you to get in on the conversation. You can do so by sending us a text message to 129090, standard messaging rate. Do apply. You can also tweet at us at Illegal Curve. If we like your text, if we like your tweet, we may even read it on air. And of course, our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's available at illegalcurve.com. I say good morning to Ezra and good morning to Dave. Gentlemen, it was only about 12 hours ago that the Jets were putting a finishing touch on a commanding 4-1 victory over the Minnesota Wild. That was about as dominant of a final 40 minutes as you're going to see one NHL playoff team play against another NHL playoff team.
Yeah, that's right, Drew, and good morning, boys. And, you know, it's hard to believe the Jets were only up 1-0 after two periods. Kind of similar to the first game when the score was tied at 0 going into the third period. But, look at whatever metric you want to look at here. I mean, the possession was completely in the Jets' favor, Drew. We talked about it after the game yesterday, in both dressing rooms. I mean, the ice was completely slanted. The Jets had the Wild hemmed in basically the entire third period, similar to the third period in game one there. But the Wild just didn't seem to have a response, guys. I mean, the Jets were bringing everything they had, and the Wild just were unfortunately not able to muster up, it seemed like, a couple of passes. And, you know, give the Jets a lot of credit here. You know, they go up 1-0 with that big goal from Tyler Myers, and, you know, you think that they should have had a couple more goals. A lot of credit to Devan Dubnyk. I mean, Dubnyk has been incredible these first two games, but, you know, the Jets came out in the third period and were absolutely flying. And I mean, if the Wild keep this up, I mean, this series is going to be over in four games. We know the Wild are really good at home, Dave, but it's really surprising to me how there was such a little pushback in that game. And, you know, you're missing Ryan Suter, yes, but the majority of your forwards are there. And I think it's a big problem when you have to move up a rookie like Jordan Greenway onto your top line because your top line is not producing. In my opinion, the Scheifele line in every respect has dominated that Eric Staal, Jason Zucker, and Nino Niederreiter line.
Yeah, and I actually like Jordan Greenway's game. I thought he looked pretty good last night, maybe with the exception of the time Joe Morrow destroyed him behind the net, but I thought his game was pretty good. And, you know, you stole the word out of my mouth as pushback. That's what I was going to say, is that, you know, we were talking about it in the press box last night, how, you know, the Jets are up 1-0, but it's precarious because if Minnesota gets that tying goal, mm-hmm. a game you've dominated has now suddenly become a tying tie game.
We saw that in the regular season with that game against Anaheim, where the Jets were dominant, and then Nick Ritchie, I think, scored for Anaheim,
right,
and then Kyle Connor eventually won for the Jets in overtime.
Right, but so you're anticipating some form of pushback, and then we kept looking at the clock and the scoreboard, and we're thinking to ourselves rather incredulously that there hasn't been a shot against. And, you know, you're thinking that there's going to be some push by Minnesota, and they couldn't muster anything. The Jets ended up outshooting them 17-3 in that third period. 17-3. I mean, it was 14-5 in the second, and now it's 17-3 in the third. And again, like I said, if you're going to be able to push back it against a team, it has to be you're down a goal and you're trying to tie the game. And instead, it's the Jets who are maintaining possession of that puck and keeping all the momentum in their favor. They were able to cycle like crazy. It was an absolutely dominant performance by Winnipeg. And again, we saw them blow it up in the third, get three more goals, and really – just put on a spectacular performance in front of. I don't know how it's possible, but I actually thought the crowd in last night's game was even took the excitement and even rose that to the next level.
And Dave, I really think the story has been the speed and the physicality has been too much for the Wild. And it's not just Dustin Byfuglien. I mean, we've all seen that highlight now.
Man,
we were in the arena. We've seen the highlight probably 20 times now. He absolutely demolishes Mikko Koivu behind the Jets net. I mean, maybe the best hit ever.
Well,
he crushes him.
Probably his best hit since he destroyed Mark Stone for the Senators a couple years back.
Or Joel Eriksson-Ek in game one,
yeah,
right? I mean Buff has one of those hits every single game, but it wasn't just Buff. I mean, Adam Lowry was throwing his weight around. Brandon Tanev had a few really good hits in that game. Ben Chiarot, we've talked about Ben Chiarot a lot. I mean, he's kind of the forgotten man on the back end for the Jets, but Ben Chiarot had several really good body checks. So it wasn't just one or two players. I mean, the Jets, I think, were really kind of intimidating the Wild with their physicality and their forecheck, and the Wild just didn't seem to have a response at any point in that game. And, you know, the final score ends up being 4-1. It could have easily been 6-1 or 7-1.
The Jets were that dominant. The hits in the game last night, and this, you know, hits are sort of a notoriously difficult stat to track, and there's a lot of subjectivity in it. 38-23 for the Winnipeg Jets in terms of the hit count last night. 8 hits by Dustin Byfuglien. Many of them of the highlight variety. I mean, we tweeted last night that he hit Mikko Koivu so hard that Mikko Koivu thought he was his brother Saku Koivu after getting up from that hit.
You know what? The one thing that I thought they were trying to do to the Jets, especially to some of the younger forwards, is try and get under their skin. You know, you saw a lot of after the whistle chat, especially at Patrick Laine in the first period. Carson Soucy was really trying to get under his skin. Mm-hmm. Went after Josh Morrissey. So, to me, it was an attempt at the Wild for shenanigans after the whistles. But really, I mean, the Jets weren't really having anything of it. They weren't intimidated by Minnesota, and they just dominated them. But not for the performance of Devan Dubnyk,
yeah,
who again, you know, made 40 saves in last night's effort. I think he was around 40 in that first game. I mean, if it wasn't for his effort, this series would be like, it would be a 15-0 score right now in terms of the last two games, because he's been phenomenal, and really his team has given him no support.
Well, Devan Dubnyk has faced, I think, something like 84 shots on goal in two games. I mean, that's an incredible amount of rubber to be thrown at him. And, you know, Patrick Laine scores that fourth goal to make it 4-0 for the Jets at that point in time. And as we were talking about it last night, as we were doing the post-game podcast, which is, of course, available on illegalcurve.com after every home playoff game, Devan Dubnyk just sort of looked like a guy who, on that Laine goal, just was shell-shocked. He'd faced so many pucks. He'd done everything imaginable to keep his team into the game and to give them a chance. And his forward group and his defensive group responded with nothing. I mean, to go a full 20 minutes of game action without getting a shot on goal, which is what the Minnesota Wild did. They went from the 15:02 mark of the second period to the 15:05 mark of the third period. An entire 20 minutes of game action, 20 minutes and 3 seconds without a shot on goal. It is a absolute damning testament to the performance of the Minnesota Wild forwards and defensemen last night, and at the same time, a tremendous accomplishment by the Winnipeg Jets to neutralize an opponent to that extent.
Yeah, you put it really well there, Drew. It's almost unfathomable that a team in the playoffs, and again, the Minnesota Wild are not a bad team. I mean, this is the third place team in the Central Division. So it's not like the Jets are playing a poor opponent here.
Yeah.
And, you know, Devan Dubnyk, I thought, I mean, he was fighting right until the end. Remember that save he had on Dustin Byfuglien? That was a 100 mile per hour slapper, and Devan Dubnyk makes that big glove save. I mean, he was battling right until the end. The game was over at that point.
Sure.
The Jets were up 4-0, and sure, they get the garbage time goal from Zach Parise, so you get a little bit of life there at the end. But let's be honest here, guys. You score with, you know, 35 seconds left, whatever it was, 45 seconds left. It's a 4-1 game. I mean, this is going back to St. Paul, and you're down 2-0. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you can't take a lot out of that goal. You can't build, you know, a lot of momentum off of a goal with less than a minute to play. But Dubnyk was incredible. But, you know, you mentioned the Jets' defense, and, you know, Paul Maurice always talks about the gaps. And, you know, hockey people know about the gaps and all that. But Minnesota couldn't do anything through the neutral zone. I mean, they could not gather speed through the neutral zone. And, you know, Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba, again, we've talked about them so many times this year, but they have been so good on that top pair, and the Wild just can't seem to have any sustained pressure in this series. And, you know, the Jets had the puck in the Minnesota Wild zone for basically the last two periods. I mean, the possession was completely in the Jets' favor. We know the numbers, and, you know, it looks like, you know, right now, if the Wild don't get one of these two lines going, I mean, Mikko Koivu, Mikael Granlund, and Zach Parise on that second line, you expect them, you know, to get something going here, because Stahl, Zucker, and Niederreiter, they just haven't been very good in the first two games.
They've been absolutely dominated by the Jets' top line. I mean, in a top line on top line matchup, the Jets have won that battle, you know, and not even remotely close. It's just been an extensive domination by Scheifele, Wheeler, and Connor against the Minnesota Wild top line. Ezzy, you mentioned the possession. At the end of the game in 5-on-5, the Jets at 70% and the Minnesota Wild just under at 29.76%. But if you look at it from the second and third periods on, because most of us would agree that the first period was fairly evenly matched, the Jets, you know, were the better of the two possession teams, but it wasn't as dominant. From the second and third period, the Jets controlled 77% of the play to the Minnesota Wild 23%. I mean, that's not... I mean, those are numbers that you see in an exhibition game when one team is dressing veterans and another team is dressing rookies. The Wild had 11 shots on goal at even strength during the game last night. I mean, they had 5 even strength shots on goal over the final 40 minutes. That's not even... I mean, you can dump the puck in and get more shots on goal. That's just, I mean, it was an incredible performance by the Jets last night.
I thought Andrew Kopp and Jack Roslovic were really impressive on that third line. And, you know, Andrew Kopp has been kind of a staple of that fourth line with Adam Lowry and Brandon Tanev. And he gets rewarded for a goal there in the third period. A really nice deflection off the pass from Brian Little. And, you know, we expect, you know, Matty Perreault to get back in the lineup sometime here, guys. But I was really impressed with that third line, Drew, because I didn't think that line was that great in the first and second period. You know, it was really, you know, the Scheifele line and the Stastny line that was doing all of the damage. Obviously, you know, Lowry, Tanev, and Armia were doing a good job there on the fourth line. But really impressed with Andrew Kopp's game specifically yesterday. Looked really good on the penalty kill as well, Dave.
Yeah, no, he looked. More and more confident as he has looked more and more confident in the last month of the season, I thought, and into the playoffs. I think his game has really grown, and he's being rewarded for a lot of hard work that he puts in throughout the season by the coaching staff for what he's now being given, which is an opportunity on the third line. So I like Andrew Kopp's game a lot, and I think he's really contributed to what the Jets have been able to do.
Yeah, you know, Paul Maurice has the Jets playing a simple game right now. And a simple high skill game, which is sort of, you know, hard to fathom that you can do both at the same time. But the Jets were an absolute dominant force last night over the Minnesota Wild to take a 2-0 series lead with that 4-1 victory. When we come back, we're going to look at both games, the entirety of the series so far. We'll start by looking at the performance of the Winnipeg Jets and Minnesota Wild forwards. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Laine breaks it up, gets it back for Stastny. He'll leave for Laine. Laine watches it, scores! Patrick Laine takes the drop pass, and he rips the twisted wrister high glove side. His first of the playoffs, and we're tied 2-2. Fires all the way back in behind the net for Ehlers. For Laine, scores! Patrick Laine with his second goal of the playoff series, and the Winnipeg Jets have a 4-0 lead.
Patrick Laine, 2 goals in his first playoff performance, his first playoff series. It was the tying goal in Wednesday's Game 1, and it was the fourth goal. A little bit of window dressing in Game 2 last night. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Tremendous atmosphere. We're going to talk about the forwards because there's some line juggling and some roster decisions potentially upcoming for Paul Maurice. But first, we have to, you know, pay tribute to the crowd that was there last night at Bell MTS Place and outside the arena in what is now being known as the runway. The party outside between the arena and the Met, now known, I've dubbed it as the runway.
So yeah, there's a little controversy. Yes, some other things. Other
suggestions. Hey, Ezzy ran a poll. The runway won. Did it not, Ezzy?
It's true. The runway did win.
Yes.
We had some other names. The tarmac.
No. Done. Don't like it.
The hangar.
Don't like it. The hangar is the arena.
The landing strip.
A little risque.
Yeah, it is a little risque.
Yeah, so we're going to go with the runway as the official name of the party outside the arena.
Another name that came up on Twitter was Crappie Way.
Huh.
And I really like that.
Yeah.
But I like the runway, too.
There you go. It works because you're jets and you're taking off and landing. And
but at the end of the day, and I tweeted this to someone yesterday, I mean, we're inside in the press box. I mean, really, the people outside, the ones that were braving those cold temperatures, those are the ones that should really name it. I mean, it's the fans.
So, Ezzy, if I'm reading you correctly, what you're suggesting is we should send Drew during the game out to
take a poll of everybody.
Everybody in the crowd.
Yes, I'll get right on that.
I like the runway, though.
Yeah, so do I. Mainly because I came up with the name. At least
that's good.
Yeah. Anyways, we'll go with that. A tremendous atmosphere last night. I mean, it would almost.
I think people are still partying on Portage Avenue and Donald right now.
They might be. It was incredible in that building last night. Now, certainly the nature of the game helps. Given that the Jets had the 4-1 victory, and that's going to certainly add to the party atmosphere. But when you have the different sections in the arena.
We've never seen that before.
No, that was a new one. So, if you're sitting in section 325, for example, all the people in 325 got up and started chanting their section number. And then, conversely, all the people in section 316 got up and started chanting their section number at the people in section 325. And the joint sing-along to Sweet Caroline, it was, just tribute to the Winnipeg Jets fans in the arena and outside the arena for... Just a memorable atmosphere last night for that Jets Wild game too.
Yeah, the 300s are great. Usually when I sit in the audience as a fan, I'm in the 300s, and the 300s are always the loudest. But the atmosphere, I tweeted this yesterday, Drew, I thought it was the best atmosphere we've seen in the 7 years since the Jets have come over from Atlanta. I mean, and how could you not be fired up with this Jets team up 2-0 on the Wild, Dave? You heard the fans chanting and, the entire crowd is obviously decked in white. It was really incredible. From the moment the Jets came out for the pregame warm-up throughout the game, the fans have been incredible, both in Games 1 and Game 2. And, the party's just getting started, right?
Well, and what's interesting is that we're hearing the players talk about how much energy. Joe Morrow spoke about it after his goal on Wednesday night. And he spoke about how much the crowd means to the team and how much they get from the whiteout. It could be something they're just saying, but you really do feel like that because every player has consistently talked about the energy they're able to, and Joe Morrow really was like explicit trying to get that message out, saying like the crowd may not realize how much that means to us to hear them chanting the way they're chanting and how excited they're getting. And we heard Brian Little talk about it. We hear Jack Roslovic talk about it. So it's clearly something that is impacting these guys. And the uniformity of the color really does add an element to the game. And it's funny because I'm a guy who doesn't even like the wave. Yes, that's true. But I like
the white wave.
But yeah. I like the white wave. I don't mind the wave when it's being done with the uniform.
You don't like the multicolor wave.
I do not like the multicolor wave. It's just too fractured. But this, there's a unison, and Winnipeggers are united doing the wave. So, no, I honestly was amazed.
You're more of a monochromatic type of guy.
I am a monochromatic type of guy.
He's wearing all black today.
I am, yeah, exactly. But to me, it's a function of that really was, again, we talked about it a little bit, but that the Wednesday night crowd was incredible. I thought last night's crowd even took that up a notch, and I love the dueling section chants. I thought that was fantastic, and I really do hearken it back to like that first exhibition game against the Split Squad when the Jets first came back against Columbus. I would call them the Columbus B Squad.
Yeah.
And Bufflin laid out that big hit, which again we saw last night. So as Ezzy talked about when we were driving down here, 7 years later, Dustin Bufflin's still doing the same thing. And to me, like that crowd. That crowd, 7 years ago in the exhibition game was just so happy because they're welcoming the team back that had been gone for so many years. But last night's crowd was just, it's honestly hard to put it into words just how incredible that crowd was.
It truly was. Moving to the forwards for the Winnipeg Jets through the first two games of the series, they obviously had Jack Roslovic in the lineup last night instead of Matthew Perreault, who left game one after suffering what certainly looked like they called it an upper body injury. It certainly looked like a shoulder injury that he suffered in that first game. Roslovic
Drew, we don't have medical degrees, so let's just leave that to the pros.
Okay, well, fair enough. Jack Roslovic comes in and gets two assists in his NHL playoff debut, so something he'll certainly remember. But a little bit of gamesmanship from Paul Maurice, as we, everyone expected that the third line or the fourth line, let's call it the Jets' third
B. Or
okay,
A.
Whatever. The Brian Little line.
That's the third line.
Okay, well, I mean, so, fine. We'll call that the third line. The Brian Little line, everyone expected it to be Little, Roslovic, and Joel Armia. But then Paul Maurice, you know, throws a little bit of a curveball to start the game, or right after the Scheifele line started the game. He changes things around. He swaps Andrew Kopp with Joel Armia. Armia goes down to play with Brandon Tanev and Adam Lowry. Andrew Kopp moves up to play with Roslovic and Little. Your thoughts on the swap by Paul Maurice, and why do you think that he decided to make that decision that obviously he had in mind from prior to the game beginning?
Yeah, maybe you want to add a little grit to that third line with Andrew Kopp, and we talked about it during the first segment. I mean, I've been talking about Kopp for the last 2 years. I've been a big fan of his. I mean, he's the type of player that you can really put on any line. Center or wing, Drew. Left wing, center, right wing. He can play in all situations. You're not going to see Andrew Kopp on the power play very much. You're definitely going to see him on the penalty kill. But I mentioned this. I didn't think the Little line was that great in the first period or the second period. It was really the third period where they started to come along there. But I like the switch. And, we've seen Kopp play on a variety of lines. And, Joel Armia, he maybe hasn't had his best two games here. I'm not saying that he's been bad. But I would say Kopp has been more effective than Armia, and he gets rewarded there with the goal in the third period. But it's going to be really interesting to see if Paul Maurice, Dave, keeps these lines together, especially if Matty Perreault becomes a factor. If Matty Perreault comes back to the lineup, do you put him on the third line, or do you keep Jack Roslovic there on the third line? I mean, does Matty Perreault get into the lineup in place of Joel Armia? Because as far as I'm concerned, I think Kopp has played better than Armia, and Jack Roslovic deserves to be in the lineup. We talked about it last week. I mean, we all expected Roslovic to be the 13th forward, but his first game in the series, he has a couple of assists. So he was really good last night. And, I thought, in the first period, Dave, he was a little tentative. He was kind of, trying to figure things out and make some adjustments to play in the Minnesota Wild in a first-round playoff series. But after that, he was really effective. We know what he can do with his speed. And I thought he was really noticeable, especially in the third.
Yeah, and one thing, in the defense of Jack Roslovic, is he hasn't had a lot of hockey in the last month, right? He's, mm-hmm. he's been watching a lot. So for him to, like you said, as he worked out his kinks a little bit in the beginning, and there's definitely going to be a tentative aspect because a mistake in the playoffs is magnified by 10 as opposed to what happens in the regular season. So to me, I thought, he was a little tentative for sure, but then he eventually got comfortable and realized it's a hockey game, and he's played a lot of them, and he got comfortable again, and we saw what he's been able to.
And he scored.
Well, he got two assists.
Oh, sorry, I was talking about Andrew Kopp, but yeah, go on. Sorry.
No, I wasn't.
You're talking about Roslovic.
Yeah,
yes.
I was talking about Jack Roslovic. Yeah. So the point is that, to me, there's a player who really has kind of gotten comfortable in his own skin and is such a high-level guy that, you got to remember, there's a difference between guys who get called up and guys who are on the team the whole year, right? So Jack Roslovic is still finding his way. It's not really necessarily his team. When he's with the Moose, that's his team. The Jets, are they his team? Or is he kind of like, he's been with them a lot this season, but there's still that kind of unevenness in terms of whether it's his team or not. So he's slowly but surely kind of making it his team and showing that he's earned a spot on this roster as opposed to just holding water.
By the way, Drew, Joe Pescucci just direct messaged me. He says the passenger lounge, but he likes the runway.
Oh, the passenger lounge.
Joe Pescucci, by the way, has had some excellent tweets, and he deserves big credit because he did the Patrick Laine violin. I don't know if you guys saw that.
I saw that.
And credit to Joe Pescucci. And then he also had he had another one the night before.
Where Laine goes Laine by for the fist bump.
He did the fake. And Joe Pescucci doing some pretty well on Twitter. So we're going to give a shout out to our good friend, Joe Pescucci.
I think Pescucci15 on Twitter, if I'm not mistaken, off the top of my head. But I'll have
Why don't
to look
we call it Pescucci?
Pescucciville instead of the runway?
Instead of Margaritaville, it's Pescucciville.
There, it's got a little Jimmy Buffett for you, if you will. What was most impressive to me about swapping Andrew Kopp and Joel Armia is that fourth line, which was so effective in game one, really didn't skip a beat. Joel Armia fit in seamlessly with Brandon Tanev and Adam Lowry because those three guys had played together during the regular season a little bit. Not a ton because there were injuries concerns there, especially Adam Lowry in and out of the lineup really for the last half of the year. But when they did get an opportunity together, there was one game in particular, and I can't recall exactly who they played against, but they were dominant possession-wise, and they absolutely shut down a quality opponent. And again, you saw that last night. You look at the time on ice for the Jets forwards last night. And, you know, Paul Maurice is able to roll all his forwards. Everybody's playing a reasonable amount of time. Roslovic played the fewest amount of minutes at 10.5 minutes. But when you have your pretty much your entire team playing between 10.5 minutes and then Dustin Byfuglien, who led all players at 23 minutes and 51 seconds, you're able to throw all your team out there and get everybody into the game and not have to shorten your bench. And that's so important as this becomes more of a grind and as the games add up onto your body and the marathon that the playoffs are begins to add up. Paul Maurice really being able to roll his lines right now.
Right, he's rolling the lines and he's getting the matchups he wants, right? But I think you make a good point, Drew. I mean, Joel Armia and Andrew Kopp, they're interchangeable. I'm not saying they're the exact type of player, but they have that versatility. They can play on the third line in a certain role. They can play on the fourth line in a certain role. We saw Andrew Kopp centering Line A and Ehlers earlier this year. So really impressive to see that Kopp was able to go up to that third line, contribute offensively, and conversely, as you said, Armia was now able to play more of a shutdown role on that fourth line with Lowry and Tanev. So the Jets have four lines going right now. There are no problems. I think you're going to have some interesting decisions to make when Matty Perreault is able to come back.
Yeah, and we don't know when that is, but you're absolutely right, because right now you have 13 forwards who more or less deserve playing time. You only have room for 12 of them, so it'll be interesting how Paul Maurice sort of handles that equation. I don't think they're going to rush Matthew Perreault back, obviously, because you got a 2-0 lead and you are comfortable in knowing that you can deploy the forwards basically.
By the way, is Perreault questionable for game three?
Yeah, he's a game time decision again, is what Maurice. They tried their best to get the answer out of Paul Maurice in the pregame meeting yesterday, but they weren't able to do it. So I think it's safe to say that he is a game time decision and probably will be until he's back in the lineup, given the espionage and everything that goes around this time of year. When we come back, we're going to look at the defensive performance through the first two games of the series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Ehlers banks it back to the left point to Moore. The blast scores! Joe Moore, the shot. It tipped somebody in front of the net. And between the pads of Devin Dubnyk, lining in the back track with Eriksson Ek, oh, he got drilled by Dustin Byfuglien. Eriksson Ek with his head down, and Dustin Byfuglien lowered the boom. Sends it to the right point for Myers. Myers trying to get away from Zucker, does. Myers in on goal, scores! Tyler Myers on a terrific individual effort. He was tied up with Wheeler. Oh, Byfuglien buries Koivu into the backboards. Big hit by Dustin Byfuglien.
It's been an impactful two games for the Winnipeg Jets defensemen, starting, of course, with Joe Morrow's game-winning goal in Game 1, as we all expected, naturally. And then Tyler Myers opens the scoring last night in Game 2 with his tremendous individual effort.
The Myers dangle.
The Myers dangle. We had the party dangle. It was the Myers dangle last night. And, of course, Dustin Byfuglien, human wrecking ball out on the ice, turning Joel Eriksson Ek into just Joel Eriksson. He dropped the Ek and turning Mikko Koivu.
Hey.
I know, that's your line, Dave.
That's my line.
Into Saku Koivu. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You guys got to stop regurgitating tweets.
Hey, just because you happen to be sitting next to us when we come up with this gold, it doesn't mean, you know, you could pull your weight a little bit there. You're getting a little rusty. You used to be good
the GST has been a few years, guys.
Yeah, come on. You used to be better at this sort of thing. This segment brought to you by...
I'm washed up.
We are all washed up, Ezzy. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordonville Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to catch any of the games, maybe you're looking for a place to watch Game 3 tomorrow night, Bernstein's Deli's got you covered. They have great food and drink specials. They have the great big TVs all over the place, and it is hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's. For more information, bernsteinsdeli.com.
You know, shout out to our good friend Darren Ford. He might be one of the biggest fans of the Illegal Curve sandwich. He had a couple of IC sandwiches before that game against Montreal a couple weeks back.
There you go. Thank you for that piece of information. Moving to the... We encourage you to join us via Twitter at Illegal Curve or send your text messages to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. If we like what we read, we'll read it on air. Jimmy underscore Pop says, thanks for the shout out at Illegal Curve. We tried to give the legends beside us a run for their money. Those legends being, I think, section 325. And then he starts chanting via Twitter, 324, 324.
How do you know it wasn't 323?
Because I think 325 is, I think, got a little
bit more. I
actually
think it was 325, too.
I know you do.
What section was the Queen in?
322 or
no,
320. It goes the other way, so yeah, 326, 27, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. Get out a seating chart.
I don't have one handy, but I'll see if I can get one afterwards for you. The Jets defense. That's the topic of this segment, which you might be hard-pressed to believe. Dustin Byfuglien. Is that the best game you've seen Dustin Byfuglien play last night?
Maybe. I mean...
Way to sit on the fence.
No, I mean, he was incredible. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, we've seen Buff do some incredible things here in Winnipeg over the last 7 years, and we shouldn't be surprised, guys. I mean, back in 2010, when he was a member of the Chicago Blackhawks, playing a different position, by the way,
yeah.
I mean, Buff was incredible, and he was a big part of that team that won. Sure, Patty Kane and, you know, Duncan Keith, Jonathan Toews. I mean, those guys were obviously driving the bus, Brent Seabrook, but Buff was a big part of that team, and... You know, Buff yesterday, I mean, we know what he can do physically. I mean, he has one of those big hits every game. And that hit on Mikko Koivu kind of reminded me, not the same type of hit because it wasn't at the blue line, but it kind of reminded me of Scott Stevens absolutely nailing Eric Lindros back in 2000 in the Eastern Conference Final after Lindros came back from those concussions.
Yeah, the difference is, of course, that Stevens' hit now would be a criminal offense, whereas Byfuglien's hit was 100% clean last night against Mikko Koivu.
Well, I think Stevens is a clean hitter, but, I mean, we'll get to that another
time. The game
was
different when he leveled those hits.
Right, but Buff, that hit, I mean, the impact was the same. That hit was behind the Jets' net as opposed to that hit that was at the blue line, but... The way he has played defensively, Dave, I mean, we've talked about it in previous shows going back a month or two. Buff was playing 27, 28 minutes a game, and now his minutes are a little bit down because of Jacob Trouba's return to the lineup. But
23:51 last night for Buff.
And that's where you want to see him. Yeah, I mean, I think 22, 23, 24 minutes is where you want to see him, Dave. But when you're talking about his impact on the game as a whole, I mean, he has been felt in all areas. I mean, he's been great on the power play. He almost scored a goal there in the third period. Devin Dubnyk made that sprawling save. So he has been so effective and good in all areas, and they need him because, you know, Josh Morrissey, Jacob Trouba, that's your top pair, but especially with Dmitry Kulikov out of the lineup, I mean, Ben Sherratt and Joe Morrow have stepped in nicely here. Toby Enstrom as well, obviously. We expect to see Toby at some point here later in the first round or, you know, in the second round if the Jets advance. We expect them to advance, but Buff has been phenomenal. I would probably say he's been the best defenseman over the last couple games.
Yeah, and he's been very responsible. I mean, if you watch his game, I mean, he's not taking crazy chances. Of course, every once in a while you'll see a Buff pinch, but the fact of the matter is, you know, the defensive pair, whoever he happens to be with, will generally recognize that he's about to make that sort of calculation and adjust accordingly. I mean, look, his play to Paul Stastny was the perfect setup, right? And he helps get the Jets that insurance goal that they needed to really kind of create that separation between themselves and the Wild. But his play all around the ice. I mean, his hits have been so... think about it. The crowd is already energized, and that ramps up to another level when he's doing those hits. And the Wild guys aren't complaining. It's not like they're saying, yeah, that was a cheap hit. Okay. I was unsuspecting. All the guys, I mean, as you were in the room afterwards with the Wild, and I believe what I heard was them talking about, I think Mikko Koivu was saying how it was a legit hit, and you've just got to be aware of something that's something Dustin Byfuglien brings to the game.
When Koivu didn't see him.
Right.
I mean, he just doesn't see Buff coming.
Right.
And that was a great shift for Mikko Koivu, by the way, because they were killing a penalty there.
He almost scored. I mean, he just pushes the puck wide as he's sort of, scrumming in front of Connor Hellebuck. Goes to get the puck, comes around from the other side, and he's sort of fumbling with this puck in his skates. And Dustin Byfuglien, I mean, it's a textbook legal hit. And that's what is probably the best part of it. There's no question that, you know, sometimes you see big hits and players come to the rescue of their teammates, or they say, you know, that was unnecessary, that was dirty. The Wild just have to tip your hat to the guy and say, well, you know, you lit me up because you're a bigger man than I am, and you hit me clean, fair and square, just like you did against Joel Eriksson Ek in game one. At some point in time, you just tip your hat to the defender and say, you got me.
I just think like he's just playing. He is playing next level. I mean, he is the guy that the Jets have going right now, and he's probably Paul Maurice is very thankful, because while he does have Josh Morrissey, Jacob Trouba as that shutdown pairing, Dustin Byfuglien has really elevated his game, and again, it's exactly what the Jets have needed, because he's energized the team at both ends of the ice.
And I really like the way Morrow and Buff are playing together.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew that Joe Morrow can skate. I mean, this is a former first-round pick. Sure, you know, does Joe Morrow once in a while, you know, cough up the puck in the blue line? I think, you know, we could say that he does. But, I mean, I've been very impressed with him. I mean, he obviously gets the big goal in game one, but he's been very steady defensively. He doesn't look out of place. And, you know, he can move the puck. So I think right now that second pair is sticking together for now. And then you have to decide once Toby Enstrom gets back into the lineup. I mean, where does Joe Morrow fit in? Most likely he's going to be your seventh defenseman. And then same thing goes for Dmitry Kulikov. Dmitry Kulikov, when he's ready to go, he'll be back in the lineup. But Joe Morrow has given them that depth, and they know that really they don't have to worry about him when he's on the ice.
If you had told a Jets fan that the Jets would be playing really their fourth and fifth left side defenseman during the playoffs, because that's what Ben Sherrod and Joe Morrow are their fourth and fifth left side defensemen after Morrissey and Enstrom and Kulikov. If you told Jets fans that they would be playing, you know, the minutes that they're playing, you know, Sherrod 19 minutes and 45 seconds, Joe Morrow 15 minutes and 1 second. If you told them that those guys would be playing that amount of time at this level, Jets fans would say you're crazy.
And I think it has to do a lot with how strong the Jets are on the right side.
Absolutely.
On their team, right? When you've got Buff, Trouba, and Myers on the right side, I mean, right now Tyler Myers is your third pairing defenseman. And I realize some people were criticizing Myers in game one for coughing up the puck.
He had a rough game one.
He had a rough game one, but you know, he comes through with the big goal, and I thought he was a lot better in game two. But you're right. I mean, Joe Morrow and Ben Sherrod on the left side, that's not who you thought was going to be on the left side come playoff time. You thought it was going to be Enstrom and Kulikov, but hey, that happens, right? Injuries happen. Look at the LA Kings last night, guys. I know we're going to get into it later, Drew. You had no Drew Doughty.
Yeah.
You had no Jake Muzzin.
Yeah.
And they still took it to double overtime. So, I mean, you have to make those adjustments, and this is the time of year where players have to step up. It's been Joe Morrow and Ben Sherrod this year for the Jets.
Kevin Woodley had an interesting observation that we saw on Twitter after the Tyler Myers goal, saying that Devin Dubnyk and Tyler Myers trained together in the summer, and he thought that perhaps Tyler Myers knew to go that in that spot because he shoots on him a lot in the summer. So it was an interesting observation.
He put that where Grandma hides the cookies, Dave.
Upstairs?
Yeah.
Quick look at the Twitter and the text machine, because we've been requesting people to send in.
What's happening on Twitter, Drew?
Couple people via text. Somebody says that the name for the outside party shouldn't be the runway. They say it should be the launch pad.
Ooh, I like it.
Not bad.
I like that.
Somebody else via text says that the name for the street party area should be the cargo hold. You know, all playing in on.
I like launch pad better.
Launch pad's more exciting.
Launch pad over the cargo hold so far. I'm still voting for the runway.
But how are we going to make one of these names stick?
Well, I don't know.
It's how we do everything. How do we get GST to stick?
You just keep repeating it.
No. I spoke to to Ed Tate, actually, at the Winnipeg Free Press. What happened is we spoke to the players.
Yeah.
And then Ezzy and Jay Richardson at the same time.
But let's be honest, though. The GST name was just sheer brilliance.
Of course.
I mean, there's never going to be another GST.
So Ezzy came up with it on the Twitter machine. But that's, you know, it's very nice to come up with something on Twitter. You have to actually go take it to the next level.
Yes, that's where you come in.
That is where I came in.
It was really Dennis that got it going.
Well, hold on. Ezzy was the vehicle. I was the fuel. So what happened was I went and spoke to Thorburn, Glass,
Slater.
Yeah. Actually, I think Remus talked to one of them, unfortunately.
You don't have to give Remus the credit, though.
Yeah, exactly.
It was Remus.
And so we just kind of talked about it. Chris Thorburn loved it. Tanner Glass was a little lukewarm.
Glass said, get away from me. Who are you? How did you get in here?
And, of course, the Ivy League guy was a little lukewarm about it. And
how did you get in here?
Yeah. And then we talked to Eddie Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press, who wrote about it in the Free Press. And then
this is a lot of years ago now, boys.
This is a lot of years.
Seven years ago.
And then I went to Dennis Bayak, and I told Dennis that, you know, we're going with this name. And
a lot of diapers ago.
Dennis, I think it was a Saturday night against the Leafs. And Dennis said, courtesy of the Legal Curve guys, gentlemen, sorry, as Dennis would say.
Yeah, he's nice in referring to us.
We're calling these guys the GST, and then from there, it blossomed.
Last thing from the Twitter, apparently the Queen was sitting in section 329.
Yeah, it was 329.
Right below the guy dressed as Elvis, who refers to himself as the King. So, you know, as you can see, everybody's getting into the conversation.
I'm just shocked these people are still awake.
Yeah, or either still awake or have woken up since last night.
My favorite is still White Thermea Robe Guy.
From game one. You enjoyed that guy?
I mean, that guy clearly went to Thermea, and then just kept the robe on. I mean, there's no other explanation.
Well, he could have.
I mean, did he go to Thermea and then go home and then, you know, take a nap and then put the robe back on?
I think he came right from Thermea.
Yeah, I think so too.
One other person via text right now says that the outside part should be called the jet stream.
Ooh.
Also, you know, I can give it some consideration.
I like launch pad.
Launch pad's good.
I'm into launch pad.
Keep it coming via text. $12.99. These standard messaging rates do apply. And, of course, via Twitter at Illegal Curve. We're having some fun with you this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Line A up top with it. Line A sends it down for Wheeler. Line A and Bufflin switch spots. Bufflin the glove. What a save. Devin Dubnyk with an unbelievable glove save on a ripper from Dustin Bufflin from the edge of the circle.
Devin Dubnyk, goaltender for the Minnesota Wild. The only reason these games haven't been even more one-sided, he's faced an absolute ton of rubber through two games in this series. He's been the best player for the Minnesota Wild. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Drew, I think we might have something with this launch pad.
You know, people are hating launch pad now.
Yeah, really? We have one person via...
How quickly the people turn.
We're asking people for what they suggest their names should be for the party going on outside of Bell MTS Place. One person, there was a suggestion of the launch pad. One individual says, we are not the Rockets. It can't be the launch pad. Needs to be the runway. Jets take off from a runway. That was Big Don coming in. Somebody else suggesting the landing strip, but we already vetoed that one earlier.
Somebody else said Blizzard Block Party.
The airfield just came in via text. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, via Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's where we're also getting some suggestions. Brian Foy likes Blizzard Block Party. Mama Ash likes the launch pad. Claude likes White Noise as the name. Whoa, they're coming in real fast and furious. I'm going to catch up on some of these while we talk about the goaltending last night.
I'd suggest we just cancel the show and just do names.
Just start rattling off names.
Let's just spend the next 3 hours taking suggestions for the outside name, and we'll eventually come up with something. We'll create a consensus in Winnipeg.
I think right now the leaders have to be the runway, launch pad. I also like Crappie Way.
Crappie Way. Wayne is saying the tarmac. Dan likes the jet stream. We have a blizzard bunch. That's from Alicia Dacey. They're coming in fast and furious. Let's talk about Devin Dubnyk and how important
We need consensus, people.
That's okay.
How important Devin Dubnyk has been to the Minnesota Wild. And then conversely, the performance of Connor Hellebuck for the Winnipeg Jets certainly hasn't been overwhelmingly tested, but he's been solid for the Jets.
Yeah, Hellebuck almost gets the shutout. I mean, Zach Parise, obviously, you know, he ruins it there with about 35 seconds left in the game, Dave, and he makes it a 4-1 game. So
did he ruin it, or did you ruin it by saying shutout?
I never say shutout when a goaltender is about to get a shutout.
You know, you have no power whatsoever. You can say shutout. You don't play the game.
It's just a superstition.
It's a stupid superstition.
A stupid stition?
Yes.
I mean, Devin Dubnyk was incredible yesterday. He deserved to be one of the three stars. He really did. I mean, he makes, 43 saves, Dave?
No, 40.
40 saves? 44 shots?
Yeah.
So, incredible performance. And he was really good in game one, too. He was the only reason that game was scoreless late in the second period. And why should we expect anything but, you know, excellence from Dubnyk? Dubnyk had 40 wins for the Wild last year. He was one of the best goalies in the league. This year, you know, his numbers dipped a little bit, but he was still very good after struggling early on in the season. So, I mean, we knew this was going to be a goaltending battle. We knew that Dubnyk was probably going to have to outplay Hellebuck in order for the Jets to have a chance. Pardon me, the Wild to have a chance. And I would say that Dubnyk did outplay Hellebuck. He obviously faced a lot more shots. And, you know, Hellebuck obviously wasn't tested as much, but when he was solid. So, I mean, for me, you know, you look at the goaltending and that hasn't been the really the deciding factor in the series. It's the Jets have dominated possession at 5-on-5. Because let's be honest here, the Jets only had two power plays yesterday. The Wild scored the goal late on the power play. So special teams have not been a factor. But when you talk about goaltending, I think it's what we expected. We expected both of these goalies to be really solid. And, you know, Hellebuck and Dubnyk have been solid. And I don't see that changing at all in games 3 and 4, Dave.
No, and it's, you know, it's unfortunate for Devan Dubnyk that his team hasn't shown up the way he has. And perhaps, again, that's more of a testament to the fact that the Jets have shown up the way they did. And they've just dominated the game. And but for his play, I mean, this series would be long over. I mean, I think it's probably over anyways, but the reality is that he's been the only reason that Minnesota has even kept it close through 40 minutes.
Dubnyk has kept it respectable for the Wild, because I think anybody watching that game yesterday would say that it could have easily been 5 or 6-0 for the Jets at one point.
He's been the best player for the Minnesota Wild, and it's not even close. And that's the problem. Because at the beginning of the series, before the series started, as everyone was doing their predictions or their prognostications, they said for the Minnesota Wild to have a chance, Devan Dubnyk needs to be their best player. And the problem is he has been, but all their other players have been so horrendous, for lack of a better word.
You know what the Wild need, though? They need an offensive attack.
They need more than 11 shots in 5-on-5 situations.
Right. The Wild have to make it tougher on the Jets to defend, and you know, you have to put some more rubber on Hellebuck. I mean, Hellebuck doesn't face a shot until, you know, the 15-minute mark of the third period. It's incredible. But I mean, they just haven't made it hard for Hellebuck, in my opinion, especially game two.
Yeah, I mean, game one was, I mean, you sort of forget now that the Minnesota Wild took that 2-1 lead. And you have to think that they were a bit of a demoralized team last night. They take that 2-1 lead in the third period in game one, a game where they were outplayed, not horrendously outplayed, but outplayed, but yet they have that 2-1 lead early in the third period, and then they just stop playing. And the Jets are able to, you know, tie the game, you know, under a minute later with Patrick Laine getting his first of the playoffs. Then Joe Morrow gets the long shot from the point when Charlie Coyle tips it past Devan Dubnyk. And then what you saw last night, what you saw yesterday, even after the first 20 minutes, which was relatively even, you saw a Minnesota Wild team that when the Jets got the first goal, when Tyler Myers got that goal to take the 1-0 lead, that's a team that just absolutely sagged. They were just absolutely demoralized by a one-goal deficit. And that has to be a little bit concerning if you're Bruce Boudreau and if you're the Minnesota Wild, that even in a one-goal deficit, there was no pushback. There was nothing at all. And it's not like they were, you know, playing on the second half of back-to-back, or it was a 3-game-and-4-night situation. This is a team that just was, the Jets just were boa constrictors and just eliminated the Minnesota Wild from having any pushback last night.
Yeah, and, you know, Dubnyk can only make so many saves, right? I think we would all agree. We just mentioned it. I mean, Dubnyk has been the best player for the Wild, but with this series heading back to St. Paul, guys, the Wild have to give him some run support. If the Wild want to extend this series past 4 games, you got to start scoring some goals and putting some more pressure on the Jets' defense. And I was going to say, you got to give the Jets' defense a lot of credit, Dave. I mean, they've played really well. They've made it difficult for the Wild to get into their zone, and they've, I think, done a nice job of slowing the Wild down in the neutral zone, and they've transitioned quickly out of their own zone. I mean, the Jets are playing very well defensively. But if the Wild have any chance at extending the series, I don't think the Wild have any chance at winning the series, but if they want the series to even get to a Game 5, they got to start playing better offensively, because that's just not acceptable to not have a shot for 20 minutes.
And you expect they'll have a better performance in front of their home rowdies starting tomorrow night, but you know, the Jets need to be prepared for that. Probably weather an early storm is what I would expect.
Which ironically is coming their way.
Exactly. Ironically, that's what this Minneapolis St. Paul area is getting right now. It'll be interesting, of course, with Game 3 tomorrow night. A quick look at the Twitter suggestions coming in, because
there's a lot of them.
There's a lot flying in. We have Jerry, who suggests Gate 33 for the White out party name. Sherry says it should be the Hanger. Richard says it should be the Pattern. Matthew is a little bit tongue-in-cheek. He says it should be a riot ready to happen, which is hopefully not going to happen.
No, that's Vancouver.
Yeah, that's Vancouver. Vince Lee says, well, what about the jetpack? CJB says the carrier. We have a flight deck suggestion. Waldy says White Way of Delight.
What have I started here, Drew?
You've started a monster that I have to deal with right now.
The fuel tank.
Charlie says he likes the runway. We have the snowstorm, the True North Street Party. Gord says the Tarmac. Cold Canuck says the Armada. Nicholas says the Mock Flock. The Runway, the Landing Strip or the Runway.
I like Mock Flock.
The Fuel Tank, as Dave said. There's a lot of suggestions coming in via our Twitter feed, at Legal Curve, and via text message 129090. Keep them coming. We'll read them throughout, throughout the entirety of the show this morning. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press. More on the Jets in the Wild. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. We're asking your suggestions about what the name of the outdoor street party should be. The suggestions are flying in via our Twitter feed, at Illegal Curve, and via text message 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. Somebody just said Passenger Lounge should be the name of the outdoor party. We have the Snowdrift, the Snow Zone, and True North Way. The suggestions keep coming in. We'll read them throughout the program this morning.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us now from Bell MTS Iceplex, where the Jets media availability will be commencing in about 10 or so minutes' time. Mike, when you need to go, just let us know and we'll let you off the hook. But
yeah, we're expecting to hear from Coach Paul Maurice first, and then we'll speak to a few players. Interesting. Just put this under the Department of Irony. It's a whiteout that is causing the Jets to have to move up their plans a little bit today. They were going to be flying out later this afternoon to St. Paul, but they've actually moved their flight up because of the weather that is hitting the Twin Cities area. So they're leaving a couple hours earlier than they had originally planned, and it's all because of a whiteout.
It is ironic. We were complaining about a little bit of cold weather. At least we're not getting hit by a blizzard or a whiteout, as you were.
Mike, by the way, guys, I've been listening to your debate as I drove to the Iceplex today. So has anybody suggested Snow Way for the outdoor party?
We have the Snow Zone and we have the Snow Drift. So no, if you want to come in with Snow Way, then that would be a your first suggestion to that effect.
Well, Dave can attest, having sat beside me for many a Moose game, he knows that I love puns. So I wouldn't suggest Snow Way as a really great idea, but I just like the play on words.
There you go. We appreciate your suggestions. Keep them coming via Twitter, at Illegal Curve, or on or via text 129090. Mike, a dominant performance by the Winnipeg Jets last night with that 4-1 victory over the Minnesota Wild. If you're the Minnesota Wild, how do you bounce back from that really, I mean, horrendous of a performance to go an entire 20 minutes of game time without a shot on goal, only 11 shots on net in 5-on-5 situation? What is Bruce Boudreau's message to the Minnesota Wild today?
Well, I mean, I think you look to your goalie and you see how you've more or less abandoned him for these first two games. It's really been, you know, Devin Dubnyk versus the world out there, and he's certainly done his part to try and steal a game here on the road. But, of course, his teammates haven't exactly given him much support. So I think if you're the Wild, I mean, you're going home now. You were one of the best teams in the NHL on your home ice. You haven't lost a home game yet, and you know, there's that old cliche that you're not really in trouble in a series until you drop a home game. So I think, you know, Boudreau, and we saw it a bit in his post-game availability last night, he was sort of preaching. He seemed like a pretty confident man, at least in what he was saying, that they were going to be a lot different team starting tomorrow night. But I think it starts with their goaltender. And, you know, if you're the Wild players, you got to be saying to yourselves, like, look, guys, we got to give him some help here. He's doing everything he can. We got to now step up. And so I think we're going to see a really highly motivated Wild club. But I kind of thought we would see that last night, too. And kind of the opposite happened.
Mike, Andrew Kopp scores the third Jets goal last night. What did you think of Kopp on the third line? And do you think Maurice is going to change that third line anytime soon?
It's funny because we tried to get some thoughts from him after the game last night on what caused that move, sort of switch Kopp and Armia. he said it was a state secret and he wasn't going to reveal it, but obviously he saw something that he felt would make a better fit. And he did make some comments actually about how much Andrew Kopp and Brian Little enjoy playing with Jack Rossovic. So maybe there is a feeling that line would have some good chemistry to kind of ease Jack Rossovic in. And look, it worked. I mean, whatever buttons he's pushing, they're certainly working right now. And that line, I agree with you guys that, you know, Rossovic looked maybe a little nervous early in the game, but by the third period, I mean, he looked like he was a veteran out there. And what he can do with his speed. And, you know, Matthew Perreault, certainly an important player on this team, but let's not forget, guys, the last 20 so games, Matthew Perreault has kind of looked like a shell of himself. And so, you know, in a way, perhaps getting that injection of Jack Rossovic is maybe just what the Jets need at this time.
Mike, what can you say about Dustin Byfuglien's performance? Have we ever seen number 33 playing a more dominant role with this team?
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of it. And here's a guy, and we asked him a little bit about this last night, you know, who won a cup 8 years ago and really hasn't got much of an opportunity since. And I see a guy who is absolutely relishing the opportunity to play on the biggest stage again. And you know, he's leading by example. He's kind of put the team on his shoulders and has said to his teammates, you know, look what I'm doing here, guys. Follow my lead. And, you know, I would think if you're a teammate of Dustin Byfuglien, the way he's playing right now, you must feel about a foot taller and 20 or 30 pounds heavier just by watching him lead the way he's been leading on the ice.
Mike Mack.
As I should just give you a quick heads up, Paul Maurice is actually on his way out for his availability. So,
okay. We'll let you go in that case there,
yeah,
Mike.
Pop in if you want to give me a call back in just a bit. Maybe we can talk about what he had to say, but if not, no worries. But
sounds good. We'll call you back. We'll send Ezzy a text message when you're ready, and we'll call you right back.
Will do.
Okay. There's Mike McIntyre coming and going. A quick hit from Bell MTS Iceplex.
My texting relationship with Mike.
Yeah, I'm shocked that he hasn't blocked your number, because I blocked your number a long time ago.
This is great. Our listeners are going to get the fresh stuff on from Paul Maurice.
Exactly.
Something that is not a state secret, of course.
Yeah, which, you know, historically, coaches aren't the most transparent when it comes to information right around the playoff time, so it'll be interesting to see what Paul Maurice gives an update on. I mean, I can't imagine there's really much. There weren't any injury concerns.
Enstrom, we will find out. He's skating again, which we found out yesterday.
Right, back on the ice.
And Kulikov, I mean, it would be nice to have some sort of update on as to his progress, because, you know, we knew that it was going to be around now when he would be kind of getting back to that. No, again, not ready to play, but at least whether he was going to be on the ice and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I don't think, as you mentioned, I don't think anybody's expecting Enstrom or Kulikov to play Game 3, Dave. I think Enstrom's probably going to be a factor if this series goes to 6 or 7 games. But I think what more people are interested in is Matthew Perreault and if he is actually going to be possible for Game 3, because it looks like right now, you know, I would say he's doubtful for Game 3, even though they're saying it's a game-time decision.
I would agree with that assessment. It just seems unlikely that, you know, whatever is ailing him would be able to, you know, recuperate just that quickly.
That was a pretty big hit he took from Mikko Koivu.
And yeah, then, and then two subsequent big hits the next shift.
That's right.
I mean, that's what killed him, right? Like, the fact is, the Koivu one demolished him, and then he goes out. You could see that he was in pain, and then he goes out his next shift, and it was as if the Wild were, like, just lasered in on him, because he received two bruising hits the next shift, and then he was done.
Some more suggestions pouring in via Twitter and via text message. You know, we are going to go with something. We're going to make a final decision before the show's over. That somebody's suggesting you guys just need to pick something and go with it. We will, but we want to hear all the options available to us.
We got a 3-hour show. There's no reason to.
There's no
to
rush
hasty
here. We got lots of time. Somebody, CJB, suggests ground support as the name for the outdoor party.
I like that, because they support the team inside.
There you go. Somebody else is voting for the launch pad. We have a White River as an option. Our buddy Rowdy from the Netherlands is suggesting flight deck.
Rowdy, by the way, got a nice little article on CBC.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was a nice article about Rowdy, the Dutch Jets fan.
There you go. Rowdy from the got an article on the CBC. Rachel Lowen says it should be the Whiteout Social, the Tarmac, True North Stronghold. Well, tons of suggestions just absolutely pouring in. And my favorite one is the gentleman via text message who says, let's try to not get too creative, fellas. Fixed wing aircraft take off from long level lengths of smooth concrete surfaces called runways. So it should be called the runway. So we're getting an airline or an airplane lesson, as well as getting suggestions for the names of the street party outside. Terminal 1 for the street party should be the name. True North Tarmac. Street Heat.
Okay, that's enough, Drew.
Okay, I mean, there's just so many of them coming in. You can keep them coming via text message 129090, and of course via our Twitter feed at Illegal Curve.
Whatever name, you know, it ends up being, whether it's the runway or the launch pad, or there's a bunch of good names that you've been reading. I think you've gone over about 100 by now. I mean, the atmosphere outside has just been incredible. And, you know, I was able to walk around there before game one, not game two. Unfortunately, we came into the Bell MTS place from a different angle.
I also had to wait for you outside of your condo. Was, you know, as I drove, you know, driving Miss Daisy over here.
Well, you had to pick me up because I don't currently own a car.
Yeah.
I sold my car yesterday.
That is the problem when you're picking up Ezzy. That's a rookie mistake. You have to know he'll always keep you waiting.
Well, I called. I said, "Where are you?" And Naomi answers and said, "He's just finishing brushing his teeth." I said, "He's never brushed his teeth before. Why start now?"
How much is a bus pass, by the way?
I don't know, but you might have to look into it if you keep me waiting any longer. Let's head to break. Why don't we do that? We'll come back. We'll look at, shift our focus quickly to the Bruins and the Leafs series. Hopefully, we'll hear from Mike McIntyre.
Let's talk
again
about that Kadri suspension.
Nazem Kadri suspended for 3 games. More suggestions coming in. Actually, the ones I can't read on air are some of the funniest ones. So, but
go to our Twitter feed. You'll see them.
Yeah, if you go to our Twitter feed, you'll see them, but I can't read them on air. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
26 saves for Tuukka Rask. Krejci with a goal and an assist. Corrali with one. Pasternak one. Backes one. Marchand one. 5 on the night.
The Boston Bruins 5-1 victors over the Toronto Maple Leafs in game one of that series. Sort of been overshadowed now by the suspension handed out to Nazem Kadri for his hit on Tommy Wingles. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. More suggestions pouring in. We'll get to them momentarily. This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Suggestions coming in from Nunavut, where, of course, we're huge in Nunavut. Jeff in Nunavut says it should be named Economy Class, which is sort of tongue-in-cheek and kind of funny.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, just so many suggestions absolutely pouring in, some for the Jetstream, the Tarmac, Donald Air Force Base, the Snow Globe, just tons of suggestions coming in, the Blizzard on Donald, the Afterburner.
You know what this is sounding like?
What's that sounding like
a little post on illegalcurve.com.
I think we're going to compile all the options.
Yeah.
The runway still seems to be leading.
I don't think so, Drew.
You just
want that to stick because you picked it.
Well, me and Cementhead 81 like the runway. So, you know, Cementhead doesn't like you, so I like Cementhead.
Let's be honest. Cementhead is a beauty.
Anyways, let's talk about the Nazem Kadri suspension. You can keep your suggestions coming in via our Twitter feed at Illegal Curve. Nazem Kadri, 3 games for his hit on Tommy Wingles.
You know what? Before we get into that, did you see Sean Corrali's goal?
Yeah.
The mid-air goal that he scored?
I did.
Oh, that was incredible. I mean, I know we're going to get into Kadri here, but this Boston Bruins team, guys, I mean, do they not look like the best team in the East right now? I realize Pittsburgh, you know, is still the 2-time defending cup champs, but I mean, that top line of Marchand, Bergeron, and Pasternak, just dominant.
They were absolutely dominant. They made the Leafs look, you know, and the Leafs for a lot of people were, you know, maybe a trendy upset pick. They made the Leafs look juvenile in that game one. And then Nazem Kadri goes and compounds the mistake. It's one thing to lose game one. You're on the road. No big deal if you lose game one. But to take yourself out of the next 3 games when you're the second line center on the Toronto Maple Leafs, that's just, you know, you thought that maybe Nazem Kadri had matured because he'd played such a sort of, he had a very good year. He had a very good year for the Toronto Maple Leafs and playing the role that they needed him to play. And then he goes and does something stupid like that. It might very well cost them the series, given how the Leafs struggled without Austin Matthews up the middle. And obviously Kadri isn't Austin Matthews, but the Leafs don't have the center depth to lose a guy like Nazem Kadri for the next 3 games.
Right, because if you're Mike Babcock, you're matching up Nazem Kadri's line up against the Patrice Bergeron line.
Yes.
With Marchand and Pasternak, right? So now you don't have Kadri for those three games. And you're right. I mean, Kadri has definitely matured from 4 or 5 years ago. But, I mean, he deserved to be suspended for those three games. That was a dirty hit. I don't care what anybody says. That was a dirty hit.
Well, the only people who don't think that was a dirty hit are you know, obsessive Leafs fans who think that was a clean hit. Or, I mean, Kadri's excuse that it would have been a good hit, but then the guy fell. I mean, the guy fell.
Come on.
You know,
I don't care if you're a Leafs fan or not.
Well, I mean,
that was stupid, yeah. And he deserved to be suspended.
I wholeheartedly agree. Three games, though. Are you ever going to learn to mute your computer before the show starts?
Let me turn the volume down on my computer here, Drew.
Yeah. Three games, though. I mean, if the theory is that a suspension in the playoffs is worth twice the amount in the regular season.
You know what? I don't buy that.
Well, was that a three-game suspension? Was that worthy of a three-game suspension?
I mean, we're talking about the playoffs right now, Dave. And I realize that, you know,
I thought we were talking about the regular season.
That would be odd. Yeah, what do you think, Dave?
Let's go back to the All-Star game.
Was that a warranted three-game suspension? Do you think that they got the number right?
Yeah. The guy was defenseless. He was on his knees. I mean, Kadri was just pissed off, and he went for a cheap hit. I mean, that's what, you know, he can claim it wasn't. He can claim that had he been standing, it would have been fine. Well, yeah, had he been standing, it would have been fine. But you can pull up. I mean, the fact is, you pull up. I mean, maybe you still deliver a glancing blow, and you get a penalty. But you didn't stop. You didn't moderate his speed at all. He came in for a full hit. And he didn't pull up at all. So, I mean, to me, it was completely warranted. Because I think they're sending a message. They're saying, look, do stupid stuff like this, and you're gonna be gone. And you're going to cost your team. And it's not going to be a one game, which we saw with Drew Doughty. Which, by the way, his response, amazing. The LA Kings, the fact that the LA Kings put his response out on Twitter, also amazing.
Well, it shows you how pissed off the organization would be with the suspension.
In my opinion, that should not have been a suspension. Yeah,
but regardless, I actually just like the fact that they don't whitewash it. I like the fact that they actually put it out there. I like the fact that they didn't censor their player. But no, I mean, I think, like, the league is trying to set a tone. And you can agree or disagree with the penalty. But the fact is, they're trying to send a message to players. Look, don't do stupid things. It's not going to cost your team, and you're not going to cost you some games.
But Dave, let's review the hit. It was charging.
Yes.
It was a hit from behind.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it was a hit to the head.
Right.
On a defenseless player.
On a defenseless player.
Right. And that's the whole point. The guy was on his knees.
And I think Kadri's a great hockey player. I really do. I mean, but you have to take responsibility for your own actions. I mean, anybody that was watching that game, I watched that game. I was watching that game live. I was thinking to myself, what are you doing? I mean, they need Kadri in the lineup, mm-hmm. and there was no need to do that. And I realize he was saying that he was, you know, coming in for his teammate and all that. I think that's absolutely ridiculous. You can't do that. And I was even thinking they might give him five.
You know what the problem is, you know, Kadri's response, which was obviously, I mean, he's trying his best to defend the indefensible. His teammates have to be furious with him. That is a selfish play. By Nazem Kadri.
It was Mitch Marner, by the way, that was caught up with Zdeno Chara. Zdeno Chara had kind of Mitch Marner up against the board. So what Kadri was saying is that, you know, Marner was kind of being bullied by Chara, so he was coming in defense. But that doesn't mean that you plaster Tommy Wingle's head into the boards.
And what Chara was doing to Marner wasn't against the rules. It wasn't legal. It was a larger player taking advantage of a smaller player.
It was Wingle's and Chara.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, I understand coming in to defend your player, but then come in and wrap up Tommy Wingle's.
Right. Right.
Don't exactly. Drive his forehead through the boards. There's a way to defend a teammate. We saw it last night when Joel Armia was getting into it with Nick Seeler towards the end of the game.
And then Ben Chiarot came in.
And then Ben Chiarot came in. And then, you know, Daniel Winnick, when he went after Brandon Tanev. And Byfuglien was desperate to get in there and try and defend Tanev because that's a size mismatch. But at least there's nothing from behind there. At least it's man on man, you know, facing a guy. You know, Kadri's hit was dirty. It was reckless. It was everything the NHL wants to take out of the game. And instead, it's really putting the Maple Leafs up against a wall after being dominated in Game 1 of a series that, you know, for better or worse, Leafs fans thought they might have had a chance in.
Yeah, and, you know, Kadri is a very impactful player. We talked about it. I mean, this Leafs team right now, it's only one game. I mean, it's a seven-game series, so this series is not over. But I think if you go down 2-0 to the Boston Bruins, I mean, it's just a matter of time before this series is over. Maybe the Leafs take it to five or six games, but just inexcusable as far as I'm concerned, Drew.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, the lot of talk about Mike Babcock and the way he deployed his lines in that game one.
Komarov is back up on the top line.
Yeah,
not back up on the top line, but he's usually on the third line, but he's now going to be on that top line.
I believe Leo Komarov played more than Austin Matthews, which, I mean, that can't happen.
Was this pre or post his getting licked by Brad Marchand?
Well, what do you think about Marchand's
antics?
Mind games, his antics?
It
wasn't really a lick. It was a kiss.
No, last time it was a kiss. This time was more of a lick.
This time he licked his neck.
Yeah. It's to put it mildly, it's strange.
Yeah. Does the NHL need to, I can't believe I'm saying these words, do something to prevent a player from licking another player?
I mean,
what are we talking about here?
Like a no lick rule?
Well, I mean, maybe there needs to be a Brad Marchand rule, like there was the Sean Avery rule over Marty Brodeur a number of years ago.
I
mean,
I will agree.
No licking allowed?
It's definitely, it's almost like one of those things. It's like, why do we even have to institute a rule for this? It should be kind of an unspoken thing, but
you can't lick people in society. You shouldn't be able to lick them. You shouldn't be able to lick them on the ice.
I wouldn't want to lick a person anyways. But the reality is,
how many times can we say lick?
Well, I mean, did you ever think you'd need to talk about it like this?
Probably not.
So, I mean, should the NHL do something to? I mean, should he get? Obviously not suspended. Should he be fined? Should he be instructed that further lickings will cause further supplemental discipline?
Drew, I'll tell you this much: if there is a press release from the NHL saying that Brad Marchand has been suspended $5,000 for licking another player, yeah. I will love that.
That would be the best. That would probably be the best press release that the Department of Player Safety has ever had to release.
At least they would have some fun with it, I suspect.
No, they have no fun. They have no senses of humor.
We should give a shout out to Zach Hyman, by the way. Beautiful goal that he scored for Toronto.
Yeah.
Well, just beautiful.
He's been one of the most consistent Leafs players, which is a bit of a problem in that, all due respect, he's a role player for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Right, and you mentioned the lines, and Jonas Siegel, good friend of the program, was covering the Leafs, as he always does, and it looks like Hyman's going to be on that second line. Marlowe's actually going to move to center,
yeah,
as opposed to moving Tyler Bozak up, because Tyler Bozak centers that third line with James Van Riemsdyk, and then Connor Brown is usually on that third line. So it looks like the second line is going to be Hyman, as I mentioned, Marlowe and Mitch Marner. But you have the veteran leadership and experience from Patty Marlowe there. So I think the Leafs will be competitive here in Game 2, much more competitive. But still, you'd much rather have Kadri in the lineup to go up against Bergeron's line.
Does Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, they need to play more than Leo Komarov?
Need to be better, too.
They need to be better, too. But, I mean, Mike Babcock is, Leo Komarov certainly has a role to play. But you're going to win with your horses, and your horses are Matthews and Marner and guys like that, not Leo Komarov, who is effective in the role that he plays for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Right, and Komarov, we know what Komarov does best. I mean, Komarov's got some skill, but he's a guy that brings that physicality, so I think that's what you're doing there. You're trying to make a little bit more room for Matthews and Nylander, because let's be honest, Matthews and Nylander, those are skill guys.
Here's what Craig Button had to say about Nazem Kadri's hit on Tommy Wingles in Game 1.
Thank you. Well, that was an eventful game number one for Nazem Kadri, but not in an ideal way. Most notably, third period, back-to-back boarding penalties on Tommy Wingles. The second one was vicious. Kadri afterwards says he was already committed to the hit, and then Wingles fell down. So what's your reaction to that? We know he's having a hearing. And will he be suspended?
Yeah, the problem was he was committed to the hit, and it was a reckless, dangerous, unnecessary hit. Wingles was already down when he made contact. There was more than enough time for Nazem Kadri to pull out of that hit, and he didn't. And there's intent here. He's going over there to try to deliver a vicious hit, and he does. There is no place in the game for that, and it needs to be dealt with a suspension. Listen, I can say one. I think two sends a real message that this is not going to be tolerated. It's dangerous and you cannot have it. It's not a hockey play. And Nazem Kadri, after the precedent that they set with the Doughty suspension, they have to carry forth with a Kadri suspension, and I would give him two.
All right, if Kadri misses a game or two, what are the ramifications for Toronto losing their number two center?
Well, that's the key, is the number two center. So does Bozak move up into that slot? Do you move Marlowe into the middle there? Bottom line, it leaves a big hole in their lineup. And against the Boston Bruins on Thursday night, they played the game on their terms, and they played a lot of it in the Toronto zone. So without Nazem Kadri, it just puts more stress on the forward group. It puts more stress in your ability to try to withstand what the Boston Bruins are doing. And what they did was relentless, purposeful, and they snowed the Leafs under. So it goes without saying, it leaves a big hole without Kadri in their lineup.
That's Craig Button talking about Nazem Kadri. He was suspended for 3 games. A quick look at some other suggestions for the party outside Bell MTS Place. A lot of votes again for the runway. Area 204 has also been suggested. And, well, we got more coming in via text message as well. Ground crew, the ice wall, which is apparently a Game of Thrones reference that I don't understand.
Oh, I understand that.
Okay, well, there you
big
go.
Big Game of Thrones fan. Okay.
There you go. Dave's a big Game
Who's
of Thrones fan.
Who's going to make the final decision? I feel like we need, like, Ace Burpee here to make the call here.
Well, I got area 204.
Yeah, just area 204. You know, that's coming in. Lots of suggestions coming in.
The only problem is, wouldn't the people in area 431 be upset?
The area code 431, the alternative area code, yes. You'd be surprised how many people don't know there's an alternative area code, I bet.
It's not called an alternative, it's just a second.
But who do you know that actually has that area code for their cell phone? I know no one. Everyone's 204.
Lane Bennis.
I think Tim Campbell actually might.
Really?
I think so. Don't quote me on that, but I think so.
There's no way you have Tim Campbell's phone number.
I don't have anyone's phone number.
You don't have a phone.
When we come back, we're going to be joined by Willie Donick. We'll talk about Game 1 of the Predators Avalanche series. More of your suggestions as to what the party should be called outside Bell MTS Place. You can do that via our Twitter feed, at Illegal Curve, or via text 1299. These standard messaging rates do apply. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.